Why does the Bible tell us that everything is meaningless? What's the point of living if there's no meaning? Stay tuned. Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition with Dr. R.C. Sproul is next. Welcome to this Weekend Edition of Renewing Your Mind with founder and president of the Ligonier Academy of Biblical and Theological Studies, Dr. R.C. Sproul. Perhaps you came to your own realization that life has no meaning. You looked around at what the world had to offer, and you were left utterly dissatisfied. So you turned to the Bible for answers, but you opened to the book of Ecclesiastes and read the words, "Vanity, vanity, all is vanity." Or as other translations say, "Meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless." With an assessment like that about life under the sun, you'd have to wonder what the point of life really is. Today, as we continue with our survey of the Old Testament, Dr. Sproul will take us through the book of Ecclesiastes to see the futility of life without the hope of the resurrection of Christ. With more on that, here's Dr. Sproul.
One of my favorite books in the Old Testament is the small book of Ecclesiastes. It may sound strange to people, but my work in my career as a professor of philosophy and of apologetics is part of the reason why this book is so important to me, because it expresses the wisdom of God over against a prevailing cultural atmosphere of skepticism. Another reason why I love this book is personal. This was the book of the Bible that was used of God in my own personal conversion. In fact, the only text of Scripture that the person who told me about Christ mentioned in passing was an obscure reference from the book of Ecclesiastes that said, "A tree falls in the forest, and where it falls, it lies." And I'm probably the only person in the history of the church who was converted to Christ by that verse. But it was a profound experience of illumination as I sat and listened to that. And as it was applied to my life, I saw myself going nowhere, lying on the floor of the forest, having fallen. And I was rotting and disintegrating. And that's the vision I saw of my own soul when this text was opened up to me. So my personal love for the book is without end for that reason. But the book of Ecclesiastes is puzzling to many people because so much of it is downbeat. And it has an air of cynicism at times and skepticism. And it's one of the most difficult books in the Old Testament to interpret for this reason. And there are all kinds of questions about exactly who wrote the book. It's attributed to the preacher or the Koheleth of Israel, and allusions to Solomon. And tradition has it that Solomon wrote the entire book, but there's questions about that. And one of the theories is that there's kind of a dialogue going on in this book. And the Koheleth is more or less the foil for the believer. And so the charges of the skeptic are raised, and then the response from the wisdom of God is given. And that kind of approach to wisdom literature was not unprecedented in the ancient world. But for these and other reasons, the book is a little bit difficult from time to time to understand. But it's almost like reading a 20th century existential philosopher and discovering such a philosophy millennia ago. It's at times like reading Sartre and Camus or Kierkegaard or some of the other atheistic thinkers of our day. I think, for example, of Ernest Hemingway, who sometimes has been described in American literature as one who embraced pessimistic naturalism. He saw the futility of human existence, and he complained about the problems of meaninglessness that assaulted his own soul. He ended his own life, as you know, with suicide. One of the books for which he is famous was titled The Sun Also Rises. The title for that book is taken directly, verbatim, from the text of the book of Ecclesiastes. Well, the book begins with a sense of a cyclical view of life, which was common in the ancient world, particularly in elements of Greek philosophy, where the idea was that everything in this world is simply going around and around in a never-ending circle. And there is no ultimate beginning to human experience and no terminal point of triumph, but everything is locked in this never-ending circle that is going nowhere. What goes around comes around. Well, the book of Ecclesiastes begins with these words. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, understand the phrase vanity of vanities, or vanity of vanity, or vanities, is a common literary form in the ancient world. We find it in the New Testament when Jesus is called the Lord of Lords or the King of Kings. It's a way to express the superlative degree of something. And so what the book begins with is a statement in the superlative degree about some idea. And the idea that is stressed here is the idea of vanity. Now, we use the term vanity to refer to egotism or pride, but that's not the connotation of vanity here. Here, the term vanity refers not to pride, but to that which is done in vain, that which is futile. And so we could translate the idea here, futility of futility. All is futile. Now that's the central motif here that the book is addressing. And we notice in the book of Ecclesiastes, poetically, there are two different points of reference. On the one hand, there is the phrase, under heaven or under the sun. Now, under the sun, it is thought by many commentators, refers to the sphere of this world. Under heaven refers to the sphere of the domain of God. And so what is going on here is the conflict between two realms. The realm of this world and the perspective of this world vis-a-vis the realm of God, the eternal realm, which gives a completely different perspective. You know, we're told that we live in the age of secularism. And you always hear about secular humanism or humanistic secularism. You put that little ISM on the end of the word secular, and anytime you have an ism, you're talking about an ideology, a philosophy, system of thinking. The word saeculum is one of the Latin words that refers to this world, and it differs from the word mundus. Mundus in Latin describes this world spatially. Saeculum describes this world with respect to time or temporally. And the basic motif of secularism is we live in the here and now, in this saeculum, in the temporal, and we are cut off from the eternal. The heart of secularism teaches There is no eternal. There's only the temporal. And so whatever meaning we can discover in this world has to be discovered there, in this world. And the axiom is, you only live once, then you die, so you might as well do it with gusto. That's the creed of modern man. And that creed is as old as people. And what the author is doing is exploring the implications of life in this world when it is cut off from the eternal or from the transcendent. So he says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? You see, he's asking the question, what use is there for all of the pain and the effort and the labor of my hands? All life is as grass. We work as hard as we can, but in the final analysis, we perish. And our labor perishes with us. One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south, turns around to the north. The wind whirls about it continually, all comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man can't express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. I mean, that is exceedingly pessimistic information. And every human being has experienced the threat of that pessimism and the doubt that is raised when you wake up and you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, why am I doing this? At my age, I run into people who are my contemporaries. And many of them have gone through the crisis as they come into their twilight years. And they look at me and they say, R.C., there must be more to it than this. And I say, there is more to it than this. And that's what this book is about. And so at the beginning, we see this cry of futility. And then as the book proceeds, various things are examined that people pursue in order to find happiness, to find meaning and significance to their lives. They look for pleasure. Hedonism is evaluated. Hedonism is that philosophy that says that the purpose of life is to maximize pleasure and minimize pain. We hear our own generation being described as the pleasure seekers, those who are looking from one party to the next, from one drug to the next, from one high to the next, from one entertainment or amusement to the next. Physical pleasure becomes the narcotic of choice for people who have no hope. The Apostle Paul understands that in the New Testament when he writes to the Corinthians who were convinced that there was no life after death, or some who were raising that question, and Paul is answering them. He cites one of the axioms from the Epicurean philosophers. Let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Now, Paul is not saying to the Christian community, let us eat, drink, and be merry. He prefaces that by saying, if Christ is not raised, then let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Because if God is not home, If we are bound to the secular experience, and that's all there is, then it makes sense to be a hedonist, to eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow you die. But there's always a price tag, what the philosophers call the hedonistic paradox. That if you pursue pleasure and you succeed in finding it, you will be bored. If you seek pleasure and don't succeed in finding it, you will be frustrated. So that the end of the hedonist is either boredom or frustration. And what is being exposed here in this wisdom literature is the folly of hedonism, the folly of seeking to find meaning to your existence by simply having a big party. And then he goes and says in chapter 3, to everything, there is a season. You want to fill that in? Turn, turn, turn. It's amazing to me that in this age of pessimism, even our popular music has been informed by something as ancient as the book of Ecclesiastes. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. You see, now we see the different motif that is set over against it, the motif of the significance of the diverse things that we experience in this world. Here, the temporal time is given purpose under heaven. And we don't do the same thing all the time. At some times, certain things are appropriate. At other times, they're not appropriate. You don't laugh at a funeral. You weep. And you don't mourn at a birth. There's a time to laugh. There's a time to cry. There's a time to plant. There's a time to reap. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to dance. And the wise person who evaluates his life in this world from the perspective of God has the wisdom to know the difference about what time it is and what's appropriate in a given moment. Herman Melville, in his book Redburn, made this observation. He said, it is not until we learn that one grief outweighs 1,000 joys that we will ever understand what Christianity is trying to make us. And at that point, his reflections were based on a text from this book. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to spend your time with fools. You see, God is a God who is intimately involved with human suffering. And the gospel is a gospel that is pronounced to people who have experienced the grief of human suffering. And the people of God are to be people who are there at the point of pain. We look under the sun and it seems that injustice prevails. Verse 16 of chapter 3, I saw under the sun in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. And so it goes throughout the book. The folly of seeking meaning through riches, through knowledge, through fortune, through fame, and all the rest. And then we come to the conclusion that death comes to all, but God is the answer to all of the questions that people suffer. Chapter 12, the final chapter, begins with this admonition. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come, And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. And while the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. And then in verse 9, moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. He pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. And the preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and the words of scholars like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And then he says in verse 13, let us hear the conclusion. That's what you're always looking for when you're studying any philosophy. What's the bottom line? What is the concluding principle? And so we come to the book. The book starts with the declaration, futility of futility, everything is futile. All right, what's the conclusion? Fear God and keep His commandment, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. That's the conclusion. He's saying, it's the conclusion to your work. It's the conclusion to your pain. It is the conclusion to your joy. Fear God. Keep His commandments. Because what he's saying is, your life will be evaluated, not in terms of this world or the saeculum of the here and now, or of the cyclical pattern of this world, but our lives, their significance, their value, and their worth will be judged by the one who judges from an eternal perspective, and who will say to us, depart from me, I never knew you. Or he will say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And when he says that, every ounce of sweat that has come from the brow of your head in your labor, every ache in your heart, every pain in your soul will find its fullness of meaning and significance. And you will discover that everything that experiences, that you experience in your life, counts. Nothing is futile under the heavens.
You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition, with Dr. R.C. Sproul, teaching us the meaning of life in view of the resurrection of Christ. Today's message, Ecclesiastes, is part of a study series by Dr. Sproul entitled Dust to Glory. The Old Testament was written over a long period of time, 39 books containing the beginning of human history, the birth of the nation of Israel, and the ongoing dealings God had with a rebellious people. What's the big picture? What does the fallen kingdom of Babylon have to do with the kingdom of God? To make sense of the many themes in Scripture and how they'll all culminate in the person and work of Christ, Dr. Sproul has put together a series entitled Dust to Glory. Today, we're making a very special offer. We're offering the entire Dust to Glory Old Testament collection on audio CDs for your donation of any amount. Call now to reserve your copy. The number is 1-800-435-4343. Again, that's 800-435-4343. Or visit rymoffer.com. That's RYM as in renewing your mind and the word offer.com. That web address is for this week's special offer only. Often, when people read the Bible, they focus on particular books and their favorite Bible verses without understanding the major themes in redemptive history. In this overview series, Dr. Sproul explores the major themes, events, and people of redemptive history, providing a panorama of biblical truth and a starting point to help you understand the content of the Bible. Again, The entire Dust to Glory Old Testament CD collection is available for your donation of any amount. Call now to reserve your copy of the Dust to Glory Old Testament series. 1-800-435-4343. Again, that's 800-435-4343. Or visit rymoffer.com. That's RYM as in renewing your mind and the word offer.com. That web address is for this week's special offer only. We're out of time for this weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind. Thank you for being with us. We hope you join us again next weekend as we continue our way through the Bible with Dr. Sproul. Until then, join us on Facebook.com/Ligonier. Have a great weekend and Lord's Day. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries in Orlando, Florida.